Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I am the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome L.L. Kirchner. L.L. is an author and award-winning screenwriter whose life and work as an expat in Asia became the basis of two memoirs, including Blissful Thinking, a memoir of overcoming the wellness revolution, and her previous title, American Lady Creature, My Change in the Middle East, a Qatar memoir. Named one of Bustle's 11 books to battle the blues. A book critic, essayist, and reporter, Kirchner was once simultaneously the religion editor for an LGBTQ plus paper, dating columnist for an alt news weekly, and bridal editor for Society Rag. Her writing has appeared in Shondaland, The Rumpus, and The Washington Post, among numerous others. Based in Florida, she is now the guest host for Home Shopping Network, runs the monthly storytelling show True Stories, and is a brand new grandma. Welcome, LL.
Hi, Maureen. It's great to be here. Thank you for creating this for writers.
Oh, it's been so interesting. It's like I get something every single podcast. So it's kind of it's selfish of me to do this.
I get that.
So tell us what you're working on right now.
Well, right now it's November, so I decided to take the NaNoWriMo challenge.
And
I know, right? Well, I'm sort of going back to my first love, which is fiction. I wrote these two memoirs basically because I had these life experiences that I felt told larger stories about our culture that really couldn't be told from a fictional standpoint. It wouldn't really do the stories justice because they were so weird. It's very weird to find yourself, you know, alone and brokenhearted in the Middle East and trying to redefine yourself as a woman in one of the world's most patriarchal cultures. That's the first book, American Lady Creature. And the same is true with kind of the journey of trying to figure out who I was after the divorce, and really my exploration of gurus and ashrams and, you know, even a sex cult in Blissful Thinking. But, you know, I'd like to say that now my life is not so memoir worthy and I'm eagerly turning back to fiction. So I am participating in my own way in NaNoWriMo, which is how I completed one novel. It really gave me the genesis to start one novel. And the work that I'm doing, the piece I'm working on right now, I'm tentatively calling it Steel City Crime. You know, I'm from Pittsburgh. That's where I was the religion editor, the bridal editor, and the dating columnist, you know, all at the same time. And this is a story, as you may have guessed, about a crime in Pittsburgh. I guess I'll leave it at that. I don't want to say too much because, I'm maybe 15,000 words in at this point. I think if you're doing NaNo proper at this point, you should be like, let me see if it's 15, like 45,000 words in. So, you know, I'm way behind.
So if some people might be listening to, might be new writers, tell them what NaNoWriMo is.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for pointing that out. Cause I didn't know what it was.
Go ahead.
So it's National Novel Writing Month. That's the NaNoWriMo. So writing month. And it is something that's completely volunteer. There are lots of groups everywhere that will provide accountability. There's a journaling service, I believe online, where you can sort of keep track of your word count. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things. I don't know about you, Maureen, but that does not work so great for me. Maybe it's kind of the rebel personality that we have.
We are both total rebels. I love it. Yeah. I'm not a joiner.
But if I hadn't had this experience before where I thought, well, what the heck, I'm going to try this because I wanted to get back into fiction. And what happened through the commitment to trying anyway, I came up with an idea that had been sort of playing around in my head for some time. This time I went into it without any idea whatsoever. In fact, I thought at the start, I'm going to try and write a romance. But you know, Maureen, romances, I'm not saying that they're easy to write, not at all, but they have a pretty well-defined shape. You know, lovers meet, they quarrel, they separate, and then they come back together and live happily ever after. And I just couldn't do it. I was like, no, suddenly there was a murder at the center of my story.
That's so funny.
So it stopped being a romance very quickly. I think you can probably relate to that. You know, I like telling stories that to me have other relevance than that sort of speak beyond the story. I like to say I tell entertaining stories that sneak up on you. You know, they're fun to read, but then after it's like, wait a minute, did I just have a healthy meal?
You've got a little bit of the grit and the need to provoke in you. And I don't relate to that at all. Ha ha. So, no. You know, the sing-songy romance, which I have seen pretty much every romance movie, I will go on record as saying that. It's funny, mm-hmm. though, I was just talking about that. I'm not drawn to romances now that I'm actually in a romance. It's really fascinating. Like,
oh, you mean the movies?
Yeah, I mean, I've literally watched every single romance there is, and now there's new ones coming out, and I'm just like, meh. It's not going to compete to my radical romance.
So right. It will pale.
So interesting how it was, there was a season of my life, most of my 40s, I would say, that I was just like, it kept my heart open romance. But
I love that. See, I am the opposite. Now I am much more likely to be drawn to a romance, whether it's a book or a movie, because I guess, you know, in my 40s, when I was just like perpetually single, I liked to make friends with people who had real working relationships, you know, not people that said snippy things about their partner behind their back or, you know, like me, we're perpetually single. Of course, I had those friends, but I was drawn when I wanted romance, I wanted real world romance, like the idea of a happily ever after. And I guess I was also really adamant I was not going to write that book. I didn't want to tell either of my stories from a perspective of all of these things happened to me, but it's okay because I ended up with a man in the end. Because in the first book, I certainly don't end up with a man in the end. And nor do I in the second book, even though by that time that the book came out, I had, you know, I was married. I'm married. But
did end up with a man at the end.
I did, right? But the goal of the journey was never to score that man. No. It was to become at last, you know, comfortable in my own skin as a woman who has not made conventional choices.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, I can't say everyone feels this way, but I mean, you want to be with have a person. It's nice to have a person. There's nothing wrong with that. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that, to have somebody to walk through life with. And
right. But Maureen, do you feel like at some point you could see yourself living like the Golden Girls dream?
Oh, I still live the Golden Girls dream a little bit. Like, I have all my girlfriends, even though I started dating, you know, Oliver, I still see my girlfriends at least once a week. Like, I have to. Like, no, I still kind of live that Golden Girls dream with my girls. And
when I say the Golden Girls dream, I mean more like where you're not with any man. Like, I guess I'm just a little bit older than you. And
No. But, you know, it's funny. The Golden Girls were like in their 50s.
I know. That's although still, when I look, thing. They seem so old.
They're the same age as the characters of Sex and the City right now. Yeah. Oh, it's
that's
wild.
Kind of depressing. Listen, have you watched The Golden Bachelor?
No, I really try to like monitor what goes into my brain, but I do watch the Kardashians. So that just throws that theory out the window. So.
Yes, I think it does. That's interesting because I don't know. I think I object to the same thing about Sex and the City, the new reboot, as I do with sort of the Golden Bachelor, which is, but have you ever watched any of The Bachelor? I guess that's probably should be my first question.
I mean, I think I watched one season because I really, it's like anything, like even like if you're reading or you're writing, you have to believe in the characters. And I watch shows like that and I don't necessarily believe in the characters. So I can't watch reality TV shows. I can't read something. I can't get invested in something if I don't believe the characters. If they don't have like at least some sincerity. I mean, sometimes you just watch stuff because it's just a train wreck, but I don't really have the patience or tolerance for that anymore.
Right.
But the reason
Well,
I watch the Kardashians is it's so fascinating that these women have gotten to this pinnacle of power and money and all these things, and then they still love each other. I'm like, okay, how do I crack that code? Not that I need a private jet.
Do they? I mean, so I don't, I've never watched the Kardashians, so I don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't, I also don't know The Bachelor because I've never watched that, but I did, actually a girlfriend was visiting me and we decided to binge The Golden Bachelor. So I'm up until whatever the last episode was. And, but what I kept thinking was, is this the trope? Is this the way it's supposed to go? Because every conversation is about relationships, which I'm sorry, I couldn't be in a relationship with somebody who only wanted to talk about the relationship, but that's probably like part of the story. I mean, I guess they can't really talk about their personal life details on national television.
They're also a creative. Like creatives, we need more than just the status quo. Like we need to talk about, I mean, at least I do, philosophical. What is the meaning of the year? Let's talk about string theory. You know, like I want depth. I want like, you know, why are we here?
Right.
We don't really, I mean, yes, the relationship comes up, but it's interesting.
But they were also, these women were sort of throwing themselves at this single guy. And maybe that's what they all do in the Bachelor show, in the Bachelor or Bachelorette universe.
Yeah,
like
it's
contestants thing. Have to throw themselves at that one person. I don't know. But that doesn't, that kind of scene, you know, I back away. I don't run toward that. I back away. So I would not do well. But also my bigger problem is that it's this group of women who is, it seems like trying to recreate the same kinds of crises that we had as women in our 20s and 30s. Like, how can I make myself, like, how can I tart myself up for this experience? Just a strange, it's kind of sad to watch. Like I've been really intrigued by celebrities. Like I recently saw, you know, Justine Bateman and even Cindy Crawford saying, this is my face. And this is, you know, you gotta like it. That's very much my, I am so sorry. That's my phone making that noise. That's very much the, you know, kind of the subtext of really both of my books is that without learning to love yourself as you are, everything else doesn't work for me. There's no point in filtering my face surgically if I don't actually like myself enough. And then the fact is when I like myself enough, I don't feel the need to do that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's all part of the interesting process of life is kind of what are your values? What is important to you? And what example do you want to be, you know, but it's so complex why people do things that they do. I mean, I just spent the weekend with my family and I'm still unpacking it.
Listen, I feel that. But that's also partly why I write, because I wasn't able to really express how I felt in my family. And so my only escape or the only place that I felt like I could express myself was on the page. And
you still feel that way? You still feel that way?
Well, no, I'm sorry that my phone is making so much noise.
I can't hear it. So don't worry about it. I can't hear it. You're fine.
I feel that way, to be honest. Yes, Maureen, I just had an event. I probably shouldn't be confessing this, but I just had an event in Pittsburgh and I had a wonderful time seeing friends. I mean, I saw people I haven't seen for years. I did a yoga workshop. I did a reading and a party and it was great. But spending that concentrated time with my sister, I often felt just like I did. It didn't matter what I said. She had made decisions about what I was saying or thinking or doing, and it was kind of crazy making. And I was like, oh my gosh, no wonder I became, you know, an alcoholic by the time I was 19.
Well, you don't feel seen, and it's
correct.
It's shocking to be around people that you consider, you know, your blood, and they don't see you. And what you see them seeing you as is not who you are, but you somehow become it. Especially if you're a sensitive person, which we both are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still like, I'm actually so grateful that yesterday was my birthday after this, we had a celebration of life for my father this weekend. And like all my family was there. I was so glad I was going into like my power time to like reclaim who I was, because I was so not myself this weekend. I mean, besides the fact that I'm grieving my father, but just all the projections and all, and just watching everyone else project how they saw everyone else. It was just like, oh my God, like, whoa, very, but you know, it helps in some ways. That was a gift, because as a writer, it taught me how to be hypervigilant about my environment. It taught me how to be very empathetic. It taught me how to always be just aware of the underlying currents of everything. And that in many ways prepared me to be the creative that I am. I don't know if I mean, I wonder if I would be a writer if I was in like the, you know, good, happy-go-lucky family. I'm not, I don't know. It's a fascinating, I wonder if there's a parallel Maureen that had like a really good family life. And she's just like, you know, I don't know what she would be doing, but it's always fascinating to like go down that rabbit hole about it. So tell us, have you changed like from, you know, as a younger writer, how are you writing? How is your writing different now?
Well, as a younger writer, that's a good question, because I got a degree in journalism. I always wanted to write things that people would read. And journalism is very different from writing a book. But I would write fiction on the side, and I loved writing short stories. I wrote tons of short stories. I think, you know, I had some things published in God knows where. But, you know, this was ages and ages ago. And then I went off, I lived in Qatar, I had these experiences, and I knew it had to be a memoir. It would have been just too disingenuous not to write it that way. I mean, this is why I actually went into a career in communications and marketing, because I realized when I got out of school that I was not interested in covering the news from an objective point of view. I always had a point of view. I would cover a political speech and I would include the quotes that made the person sound the way I wanted them to sound. If I liked them, I would make them sound smart. If I didn't like them, I made them sound stupid. It's very easy to do. Yeah. But I didn't, if only I had stuck with it, I would probably be a wealthy, you know, who knows what today, because that became very much the fashion. But, you know, when I went to school, there were a couple of watchwords, you know, never use the word I, can you imagine? And also, never, journalism about journalism is boring. Well, you know, if we hear one more cry of fake news, like all journalism seems to be about journalism anymore.
Wild. Anyway, it's changed. It's wild. Right.
Yes, it's changed so dramatically. But at any rate, so I went into communications and marketing, and I ended up writing a lot about the arts and culture, and doing, you know, things that didn't impact my career, so to speak. And I really enjoyed that. And I wrote essays, and I thought initially that my time in Qatar would be a book of essays about that experience, a book of sort of humorous essays, because it was a very weird place. You know, you'd be walking through the mall and the smell of Starbucks coffee would mix with the ceremonial incense oud. And you know, you'd see these women wrapped head to toe in black floating past Victoria's Secret's ads. And it was just the cognitive dissonance level was high. And I thought this is a great time and place to write about. And certainly that's in the book. But even, you know, you have to be careful about what details you pick and choose when you're writing memoir. I think memoir is really the hardest. It's so difficult to write. You know, if you're beholden to the truth, which I kind of am. I'm more of a Mary Carr memoirist than a fabulist memoirist. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all creative nonfiction. I believe that. Like nobody, it's not a report. I'm not writing reports about what happened to me. And yet I want to convey the truth as I recall it, you know.
But yeah, I think about that too. So subjective. Yeah, and I think about that too. Like every member of my family has a completely different perspective of how things went down. Wild. But it's just, you know, you have, if you're drawn to this form, you feel that you have a story to tell, you know, you just got to do the best you can, you know. But you got to be yourself on the page. You got to bring your perspective and hopefully it gets conveyed in a way that, I mean, I think memoir helps you, but hopefully the goal would be it would help someone else too. That's the beauty of
reading. No, I don't, nobody wants to read your diary.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the beauty of being a writer, but also being a reader. Like, you know, you can read one line and your whole life can change. God, that's the coolest. I mean, so powerful to be in that role. Tell us what a typical day looks like for you as a writer.
Well, there is no typical day for me as a writer.
I love it.
I have many different hats that I wear with different kinds of jobs. I mean, an ideal day would be to be able to wake up and with a clear mind begin writing on the current project that has caught my imagination. You know, I'll just tell you about today, for instance. So I had to get out my newsletter, communicate with the bookstore, which, by the way, that's Judy Bloom's bookstore. I'm super excited to be signing some books there over Thanksgiving. We're going to be in Key West and I can't wait. Have you ever been to Books and Books?
I have not. I haven't been to Key West in a while. And
Me neither.
She had that bookstore.
Pardon me?
How long has she had that bookstore?
Oh, gosh. You know, I have no idea. It only came to my attention kind of recently that it existed in Florida. Because
you know, I was going to look it up while that's what I would do. My reader brain's like, I have to know how long. No, I have not been there, but it's not the one that's attached to the, maybe I have been to Books and Books. Is that Studio? Yes. There's a art studios upstairs. Is that it? Yes,
I believe so, because it's called the Studios at Key West.
Yes, and there's a space because my kid is an artist and they sell art supplies in Books and Books. Yes, I love Books and Books. Mm-hmm. It is a great bookstore. But go ahead.
Well, I have not been ever, and I have not been to Key West.
Very intimate. It's
probably
very cool.
Since I was in my 20s, I think.
Fun.
I mean, I was in the Everglades not long after I moved here, like in 2017. I took a trip to the Everglades, which is so stunning. But that's not Key West, you know, that's not the same, but that's as far south as I've been. Well, I've been to Miami, but anyway, so I'm very excited about that. I have, you know, I had to communicate with some clients that I work for HSN. You know, there's just life. My husband actually went out of town, so I had to help him get some things done and get out the door. And then I realized I couldn't work on my NaNoWriMo project because I wanted, you know, I'm sort of trying to promote this novel that I wrote. And so I wanted to reach out to some agents. In other words, I've done zero writing on my NaNoWriMo project today, but I've done a lot of admin. I'm still putting things in for the writer life. I'm just glad I didn't, you know, have to go into Home Shopping Network today and do a show.
Yeah.
I did yesterday.
A lot of different hats. I would be curious. Like I'm visualizing the character that you're living. Like a woman that is in your roles and as the, like, not a memoir, but like an actual like fiction piece of this woman that's wearing all these different hats that happens to also be a writer. It's so fascinating because
I don't know if I am also a writer. I think I'm primarily a writer and everything I do is an attempt to make writing possible for me.
Yes. Yes, of course. Yes. Also a writer. Wouldn't that be crazy? As I just saw as the t-shirt, hey, I'm also a writer. So what would you tell your younger writer self?
Well, I feel like some of the best writing advice I have gotten, you know, in the past few years has been about sort of the career author journey. And, you know, the dream is to be writing. So even if I wasn't writing on the, you know, full length project that I'm interested, that I'm trying to be committed to right now, which I'll do some tonight for the NaNoWriMo project. But just because I'm not doing that, the fact of writing is the dream. So, you know, if I am writing to an agent or writing, you know, trying to do some editing to a synopsis about my book, that's all writing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And
it's all about kind of being your future self now, living the career that you want to live by claiming it as much as anything. You know, you could look at the day either as, well, it was a failure. I didn't get to work on, I had planned to work on my NaNoWriMo project and I didn't. Or I could, you know, say, wow, how amazing that I have multiple book projects going on at once, that I have so much happening with, I have to, you know, devote time to each every day.
Yeah. It is a gift to be able to do this.
Right.
But I mean, even if I just get like some stuff down in my journal every day, I still feel like plugged in, you know, and so grateful.
Now, I know I just sent you my book, but I'm getting a sense you didn't get a chance to crack it open.
I've been a little preoccupied with the
yes,
old
I know.
Daddy-O and the Daddy-O's many, many loose ends that he left behind when he decided to exit this planet. So in addition to the emotional element of it, but no, it's on my to-do list. I'm very glad that we're coming into the holidays because then I can breathe a little bit, but it's been pretty steady daddy energy since I'd say middle of July.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I know when my dad passed away in 2021, it was very intense because, you know, he was in Pittsburgh and I was here. So I had to go back,
and back and forth.
And that was really trying. And then all of 2022 or the first 6 months was dealing with the house and the will and the, you know, and simultaneously, like that's when I terminated the deal for Blissful Thinking that I had going. So it was there were a lot of things happening.
Are you happy with the way that all turned out with the book?
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, see, there's a strong theme about my mother's exit from this world in the book. And so I wasn't sure if you'd had a chance to read any of that. I wanted to see how that struck you in terms of sort of the more universal story in books. But in terms of how this worked out, I absolutely am. I mean, my concern previously was that there was not going to be a rigorous enough editing process. And I'm satisfied that it went through a fairly rigorous editing process. I mean, you always can look at a book and be like, it could be better or different or whatever. You know, you could work on a single book probably forever and never be satisfied. And that, again, is part of the whole idea to me of being a career author, which is to get to the next project. You know, keep the writing flame going. That's how you be a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm working on 3 separate projects now. Maybe 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, you got the book of essays about your dad.
I got the book of essays about my dad. I'm in the editing and submission process of a prose poetry and regular poetry memoir, Many Minettes. And then I'm also working on another book in a kind of a similar vein, philosophical, memoirish. And then I also have, And that's, I'm also including my poetry of the last several years in that. And then I'm also working on a book of erotic poetry. So, and then I write the column for The Artisan, and then I'm working on stuff with my own, the Write Life podcast. So it's just doing those little bits. I'm also like acknowledging where I'm at each day. Like, as long as I'm doing something in one of those categories, I feel like I've done a good day, you know, because I'm not necessarily somebody that's super structured. I have systems in place, but I'm very intuitive. So I will be like, what do I need to do next? And then I'll do that. So that's the way that I, you know, but actually plotting out my week, I would be more of a pantser if I was a fiction writer than a plotter, but that works for me. I still, you know, just since my dad died in the end of August, the book started like 2 days before of these letters I'm writing, and I'm at 12,000 words. So that works for me, you know, and it's just a little bit, and I'm voice to texting it. So I'm dictating it through to my phone because I don't type as fast as I write. So I think that's part of what we want to show in this podcast, that everybody has different processes and different ways to do it, but The goal is to get the writing on the page, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one more question. What would you say is like your elevator pitch or lightning strike advice for other writers?
Just write. I mean, I know that's pretty boring. And also read a lot. Yeah. I think it's really important to read, not just like watch the movie about the book, but to read the book.
Yeah.
And to read widely, not just in the genre that you are thinking about, but when you do want to settle on writing a genre that's new to you, like this crime book that I'm writing now, I'm reading a ton of sort of mystery. I should call it mystery rather than crime, because it's more, I don't want to say caper-like, but it's more based on characters than on, you know, being a gritty procedural. It's not that at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, read and write. If you want to be a writer, you have to be a reader. And if you are reading a lot and you're a writer, then you'll naturally want to write a lot. It kind of feeds itself. It's sort of an Ouroboros, if you will.
Yeah. And I can't even tell you how many times reading something, a line will spark a poem or an essay or something. And it's just like, if I hadn't been reading that little thought and that nugget would not have like been gifted to me. So thank you to all the writers out there that I've read throughout the years, because I mean, we are the stories, right? We're made up of all the stories.
Right. Yes.
So let's hear some of your work.
Okay. Well, so I am actually taking a page out from one of my writing mentors who said, you should always read from the next thing that you're working on. So my new book is out there. I think both of my books are, I think, available free if you're an Amazon person and you do Kindle Unlimited. So that's fantastic. This book is the book that I am submitting right now. And, you know, I'm not sure where I'm going to land with it. If it doesn't find a home, if I'll self-publish, well, I will self-publish. Anyway, here's the preface to Florida Girls. Florida has long been a target of public outrage. As far back as 1922, the New York Times warned its readers, Florida Purity League moves to protect the married men. St. Petersburg, Florida, January 25th. This is true, by the way. This is an actual clip. Mayor Frank Pulver had a request today from the St. Petersburg Purity League that he appoint a bathing suit inspector. Formal communication from the organization stating that the league intends to protect the married men from the wiles of the sea vamp. Wait, there's more. The ensuing swimsuit shakedown made national news, launching an enduring interest in beach-going, specifically to St. Petersburg's beaches. It was one of the more successful publicity stunts in history, dreamt up by the city's promotional guru, John Harris Lodwick. After a dazzling run, however, the Depression era toppled the tourism industry. Yet the indefatigable Lodwick kept up his efforts, planting stories of a Floridian paradise in newspapers as far away as Chicago, Charleston, and Bloomington. By the time Roosevelt announced his New Deal, St. Petersburg was touting the benefits of the Public Work Administration's projects. Drawn to this promise of renewal in 1932, Lloyd Doc Young moved his wife and two children to St. Petersburg to capitalize on what he perceived correctly would be a ready market for his forever young elixir, a 29-cent potion he sold for just $1.99. Young would go on to establish the Sun City Emporium, which he billed as the world's most unusual drugstore. A three-story retail space, Sun City covered an entire city block and sold everything from chewing gum to haircuts to his own infamous medicinal cure. A pioneer of loss leader pricing, Young developed such schemes as selling dollar bills for 95 cents and offering fresh hot breakfast for 2 pennies. Lodwick and Doc met during the hurly-burly days of Florida's economic boom, when the Works Progress Administration dollars flowed and increasingly connected the state to the rest of the country. No scheme was too outlandish to pursue. With the onset of World War II, however, the movement of goods and people slowed. Though they reconvened to discuss fresh ideas to development, Lodwick wouldn't live to see the rebound. In 1942, while traversing his beloved metropolis, the tireless promoter slumped forward in a streetcar, dead from a heart attack at 52, claiming ground to a halt until the summer of 1944, following the Battle of Normandy. With the end of the war in sight, Doc Young took it upon himself to realize a plan that he and Lodwick had discussed, with a few key differences. Whereas Lodwick wanted to attract visitors by placing articles about beautiful women in high-profile cities across the country, Young wasn't one for writing press releases. He wanted other people to write the story. Besides, he reckoned it would generate more ink to export the news. Doc's proposal? The Sun City Emporium Girls, a troupe of young women who'd project a wholesome innocence while wearing two-piece bathing costumes, not to mention other assorted goods from Sun City's new line of women's wear. Their efforts would reach as far away as New York City and Los Angeles, ushering in an era of prosperity for St. Petersburg and Sun City Emporium alike. But Doc needed more than just the cash, though he needed that too. War rationing was still in effect, and items like gasoline and spare tires were hard to come by, so he took his plan to city leaders. "We'll send out a group of girls on a war bond tour in my old Crossley," he'd enthused in his presentation to civic leaders. St. Pete's the perfect place for returning GIs to spend their entitlement dough. And so Florida's post-war population explosion became part of histories. Like most stories, this is but one version, the public version. Lodwick may well have put the bathing beauties idea in the minds of the mayor and Doc Young, but the tour was the handiwork of one Mrs. Kathleen Young. None could have guessed what they were putting in motion. Added to the extreme changes in American life brought on by the war, this tour would ultimately create the perfect storm in St. Petersburg, one that would involve U.S. Air Force intelligence, organized crime, and a power no one saw coming, the so-called girls. Well aware that their looks were being used as a lure, they couldn't have cared less. The girls were running their own con. This is their story.
Oh my goodness. I love it. And I heard the term C-Vamp several years ago, and it's haunted me. I love that term. And I when you started reading, I go, is she going to talk about C-Vamps? Oh my gosh. It's so funny because I think about Florida in that time, in that people legitimately thought that this was okay to do those things.
Right. And
you know what I mean? Like, it's just so fascinating. I love it. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to read this book.
I can't wait for you to read this book.
No one's wrote about that yet.
No. Until now, the book is done. It's ready to go.
You know what I mean? You know.
I do.
So excited. Thank you so much, Lisa.
My pleasure, Maureen. Thank you. I did pretty good.
I didn't slip up. Did. And I also called Cutter Qatar, right? I think at the beginning. We can't be perfect. It's so rude. Well, I love you and thank you for being here on Typewriter Talks.
Maureen, you are a treasure to the city of St. Pete.
That's a rumor. but you were a guest during the original Typewriter Talks during COVID, and I got rid of the video and now it's just a podcast and it's actually being heard in 12 countries all over the world.
Wow.
So wild. Yeah, that's so wild. So thank you everybody for tuning into Typewriter Talks. We drop a new episode every Thursday. I think we'll do a couple more and then take a break over the holiday. I'm still, trying to figure that out. Because, you know, I'm a fly by the seat of the pants kind of gal. If you want to know more about Keep St. Pete Lit, you can go to keepstpetelit.org. We've got all kinds of literary swag up there now for your Christmas shopping, which helps support our programming. And if you want to make a donation, we'd love it because that would help us to keep our programming going. Lisa, it's a pleasure. And thank you and keep writing because you're
not. Thank you, Maureen. Right on.
Also a writer. You are a writer. All right, everyone, we'll see you next week.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.